Hello, ladies and gents, and welcome to a season 2, episode 23 of the Homestead UK podcast. How are you doing, Mike? You alright?
Alright.
I'm Alan, my mate Mike's here with me.
Out in the deepest, darkest, almost the Shed of Dreams Mark 2.
Well, we're working on it, aren't we?
We are.
We are working on it.
It's not often I can say this, but my shit's more organised than
yours. Yeah. I'm working on it, man. I'm doing my best.
Normally, you're a much more organised person than I am.
Well, yeah, this has got a little bit out of hand out here,
hasn't
it?
Well, no, it's a transition phase, mate.
Definitely is transition phase. There's no doubt about that.
What we're actually doing is a very important homesteading task. We're doing a stock take, aren't we?
We are indeed.
We're doing a stock take / organisation for the main event.
Yep.
We're hoping the main event is going to be a bounteous beekeeping year.
That would be nice, wouldn't
it? But what we're actually doing is looking to see what we've got. Well, we've had to relocate, haven't we?
We have had to relocate, and we have a bit of an issue, haven't we, this year?
I think if we're honest, probably the last 3 years have not been on the ball, have we? We've been rushed. Rushing around.
Every time I've done any beekeeping in the last few years, it's been trying to squeeze it in between things rather than
dedicating
the time
and stuff. Yeah. I agree, and I thought that moving across to my new role, I thought I'd actually have more time for such things.
Yeah.
But there's always something to do, isn't there?
Yeah.
And so, but I think, you know, that shines a light on what beekeeping is for a lot of people, which is a bit of an add-on.
Yeah.
I think if it's your sole method of income or homesteading or what have you, then obviously you can dedicate time to it. And, you know, it's no secret that you and I are hoping to become retired beekeepers.
Yes. Yeah.
But when you've got other things to do, it is always something that you just add on, patch on, stick on, get to do a bit
more. Well, it's the sort of thing I'd do in a hurry on the way home from work, like I did last week.
Yeah.
You know, I've got better places, other places I need to be, but I've just got half an hour, I might be able to do a little bit there. And it's,
I think we both realise now, after a couple of wonky years, that we need to dedicate a bit of time to it. So it's a good time to have that thought. I'd rather have it now than in October.
Yeah, there is that, mate.
What's amazing is that the beekeeping gods have always been kind to us, and ever since we've started to keep bees, we've always been self-sufficient in honey.
We have indeed, and I still could go a couple of years without getting any.
I'm a bit more hand-to-mouth than you.
Well, if you need to take some today, take some with you.
It's all right. But we're just looking through all of our old equipment, which is a mix and a match of things that we've begged, stole, borrowed, bought,
made.
Mm. There's a lot. I'm looking. There is a bit of made, isn't there? And just getting some organisation over it, because perhaps more than anything, you know, it's all fine when you've got bees, but when you haven't got bees, it takes up a lot of space, beekeeping equipment, doesn't it?
It really does, and it's better when it's out with bees in it than it is sat in my garage, that's for sure, mate. Yeah. I can tell you that. Yeah. So I reckon we've got at least 3-4 hives here.
I'm looking at 3 big hive bodies, and then,
and I've got 2 that are out as swarm traps.
4 supers there?
And I've got another super in the car, another one at work, I think, that's out. Okay. And there's quite a few that are out. So I reckon there's a good full...
What's that there? Is that an eek?
That is the eek, but that's, I think, stuck to it. Have you still got the... You remember the smaller brood boxes that we found? You were going to put an eek on top of them. Have you still got them somewhere?
No. We gave them to Charlie.
Oh, did we?
You gave them to Charlie.
Did I?
That was a chap who we used to know.
All right.
I don't think I have. Did I try and make one into a...
Anyway, whatever. It's fine. It's not a problem. We've got plenty of gear.
They're not like we ain't got any bees.
Honestly, it's a nightmare. So we've got, 3-4 hives. 2 that are out as bait hives now. I've got 4 that are out deployed. You've got 2 that are out deployed and another 2, I think. So
mine are all in nukes, though.
Okay.
And I've got 2 hives which I've emptied now.
Yeah.
No, I think I've got 4, because there's at least 1 at Crossing Anne now, which has got nothing in it, and there's probably 2 there, I think. There might even be.
Okay.
Anyway, I'll get the ones my end before the end of the week. Well, maybe Thursday, because I'm a bit busy.
No worries.
Going abroad, bro.
Yeah.
Going to the homesteading capital of France.
No, oh, yeah. Really. No. Go and teach them a thing or 2.
No, I'm not going to go and buy a load of cheese.
Which is the opposite of homesteading. Anyway, it's all good. Good fun, mate. So I went to the bees over at the where my folks live on Friday.
Yeah.
And that is not a great scenario. And as you know, mate, already, I don't know if I mentioned on here before, but the bees at work, 2 colonies that were there have not made it through.
No.
And the ones that are out near my folks' place, There's one that looks pretty good. Mm. From the outside, the other three look all right as well.
But we've got quite a few queenlessness.
Well, there's no evidence of there being any queen in any of the other three, which is a real worry, despite there being loads of bees in there. So something weird's going on.
There has been. We were discussing this earlier, whether there's been some spraying and poisoning or whether there's some queenless colonies going through. But, you know, sometimes you've got to be patient with beekeeping, but sometimes if you want to try and get a return, you've got to be proactive, haven't you? And the thing is, as long as we've got enough colonies to keep us going, we've got the luxury, haven't we, of not having to be so desperate that we've got to solve all the problems immediately, have we?
Well, I don't think we'll ever be in that position because it turns out we're quite good at catching swarms.
Yeah.
So I don't think we'll ever be in a position where we'll be less.
No, thank goodness.
Not through the season.
We got pretty close, though, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. Yeah. Then we caught a few swarms last year, though, if you recall.
We did, yeah, and signs are, because there has been a lot of swarm action already this year, whether it's because we had that long wet spell, like really long wet spell, and then as soon as the weather turned, about it's probably getting on for nearly 2 weeks now, hasn't it? Yeah. Maybe 10 days. Everyone's caught swarms, haven't they?
Yeah,
I mean, I've certainly caught one at home,
and
I've had a lot more interest in some of the swarm traps that I've put out. So hopefully we get a few more. I think that this year, though, get them into a full hive as soon as possible.
Yep.
Get them supered as soon as possible, and then I think there's going to have to probably be some autumn feeding.
We'll have to, and that's what we've not bothered in the past. I think probably we'll need to protect the investment for the time being.
Yeah, and all the time we've got bees, and we've got enough colonies that we can afford to lose a few, if we're being totally honest. It's about money, isn't it? Because fondant ain't cheap now.
No,
how much is that for us?
Oh, I don't know. Bag. It was a fiver a bag when things were cheaper. So
yeah, and they could probably do with two of those over the course. So you're looking at £10 to feed your bees to get them through, and it doesn't mean that they will go through.
No,
And I know it sounds counterproductive, but sometimes leaving the honey on isn't any good.
No,
because the queen won't go above the excluder anyway, unless you take the excluder out.
Yeah,
you don't really want the supers to be left on over the winter anyway. No. And so it's about them having enough in their bottom store, but quite often they don't find it, do they? That's my experience.
Well, we had that swarm, the colony that died out, didn't we, the winter before, because literally they couldn't get to the honey, six inches away.
Yeah, they wouldn't literally move across.
They couldn't move across to it in the cold.
Yeah.
And so they just starved because they couldn't move to the honey that was there. So, there's plenty of food there.
Because they don't really hibernate bees, they do cluster.
Yeah.
They still go out and do cleansing flights and things like that, but they move around the combs that are in the bottom box.
But they certainly don't go, everyone, step to the right.
No.
to get to it, do they? That's not happening, unfortunately.
No, so it can be a bit hit and miss, but I suppose what we'll try and do is we try and get as many colonies up to strength as we can.
Yep.
Maybe be a little bit better at trying to get them to draw out and wait before we super so that the bottom boxes are really full, and just see if we can raise some strong colonies. It's always about that, isn't it?
So everything starts from that. You've got strong colonies, you've got opportunities to do stuff. Just have a quick look in there for us, mate, because I know I've got some frames here.
Yeah.
These are all new frames that have not been used yet. Is there any frames in there? Because I'm going to need a few, I think.
Oh, look, brace cone. Oh, loads of brace cone. What's that in there?
No.
Honeycomb's amazing structure.
Beautiful, isn't it? Absolutely beautiful.
Right, so there's nothing in that one.
No, that's fine. That's all right.
That's the old
obsive. Might need to knock
Where's
up
the glass bit of that?
That's still at work. I'm slowly bringing it all home because the building it's in is getting knocked down. So
yeah, okay. And I've got about at least three ives, right?
Yeah. We've got loads of gear. We just need to get some bees.
But I will use at least two of those to put bees in that we've got.
Yep.
So, but that's the plan anyway, and we'll try and get our numbers up.
Well, I reckon on the plus side, I've caught at least one swarm at work already.
We think there might be one on the roof, don't we?
There might be one on the roof of the garage.
Let's go and have a look. Come on, let's bring the listeners with us.
So it's still moving in and out, mate.
You can tell it's the deep darkest countryside to get first singing.
Yeah.
Where's your ladder, bro?
Ladder? No, I don't need a ladder. You can have a ladder if you want. Yeah, I'll do a minute. I'll get
that. Oh, are you going up, are you?
Yeah, no, you're going up.
Oh, I'll go up. I don't mind going up. So on Alan's garage roof, we'll try and take a photo of it, which is probably about 8 feet high. We've got one of our homemade nuke boxes, and they are probably one of the best things we've ever
made, aren't they?
We need to make some more.
We'll make some more of these and
get them up.
And even if we just sold those with bees in them, you could probably return quite a few quid on them.
£250 there.
Al's looking for his highly organised workstation. It is actually.
It is getting there.
It is getting
there. Not sure about that gap.
Oh, I'm just looking at all your homebrew, mate.
Oh, do you want some? I've got the wherry in the fridge.
Ooh.
That came out.
Don't
just there, look, just there.
Oh, look at that.
Have a little glass if you want.
How long has it been now?
It's doing another week to clear, but I've had some already.
I don't think people are going to like just listen to us getting drunk, mate.
I know.
That's an interesting podcast.
Have a little glass, if you want a little glass.
No, I'm all right, mate. I've got to drive home.
Yeah, a couple of steps there, mate.
Here we go.
Get a slightly better look at it.
You hold that.
Yep.
This is riveting listening.
It is riveting listening, mate. What do you reckon, though? I don't think there's much going in and out there now. There was loads going in and out the other day. It was really busy. I forget if it was Saturday maybe or Sunday.
I want something to poke you with. You got a poker?
It's serious.
Five, eight.
All right. Yeah, I'll look. That'll do it.
That'll definitely do it.
All right. So Mike is now poking the beehive, yeah, not a bear hive.
So what I think we've had, like you've been having over the last few days, is these scouting flocks,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah. And there was enough in there, you'd be forgiven for thinking that there was something had moved in or was about to move in or was in the process of moving in.
And then in reality... You get that tomorrow or in the week. But mine was definitely like that for a day. But then when you go home and you see it is got a colony, you always kind of go, that's a colony,
And this time of year, of course, because you're not seeing the bees going in and out as much, it's kind of easy to over-egg it and over... get excited.
Oh, it's loads of bees. but then they all go home for the winter. Go home for the evening. Yeah. No, I know that mine's got a colony in it because I've opened it up and I've put more frames in there, so I know that it's full up now. And they won't take long. I actually had some drawn combs, so they won't take long.
No.
To I thought it was better to get them going quick.
Yeah. I always use that drawn comb if you've got it. Whatever comb you've got.
So that's gone in. So they're on five frames now. But they were already doing that chaining where they come down and try and generate enough heat to melt the wax to make their own foundation, which I do think is fascinating. And swarms are brilliant at it.
Yeah.
But if you've got cells which are already made, they might tear some down and clean it up. But it takes such less time and such less amount of store that they can get going, and then hopefully we can build that colony up. You know, I'll be looking that swarm went in on Friday, didn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And I would be looking to probably move that at the weekend into a full hive, into where it's going to go.
And any advantage,
which I don't know where that is yet.
No. Crossing hands, basically.
I think it probably is, yeah. So, but at the moment, there's sheep in that field, so I want to make sure that if I think that we've had some sheep damage on a couple of those colonies there, and so it's going to be a go up on Saturday and maybe put a bit of sheep netting up around a space or finding somewhere where the sheep aren't quite in one bit, or put them in the woodside where
sheep damage as in they've knocked it over.
I think what happens is they go over to them in the winter when the bees are pretty dormant and they use them as a scratching post, and then they tip them off the hive stands, and in the summer when the colonies are big enough the bees will drive them off, but in the winter when there isn't much movement there, it's just a post, isn't it?
Yeah.
So they go up, lean on them, scratch on them, and then knock them off.
Would a couple of metal, table legs we've used before, would they be a better solution? Drive them into the ground a bit?
I've got posts I've bought, and I've got posts that I've cut from the coppice. Oh, so
of course,
plenty of timber there.
Yeah.
So just put it up, and then I've got some sheet netting.
Yeah.
And we can just box off a corner.
Yeah.
And then it would just mean that eradicates that issue.
Yeah.
I'll try. I mean, that's going to be a weekend job, though.
So let me know. I have to come again.
Yeah. Well, we could probably do it one day after work if we had enough. If we got all the bits together, it'd be all right. But all of the stuff, all the breeze blocks and the bits are there.
Yeah.
Because they're just lying on the floor at the moment. Yeah. So it might be that I could do that on Friday, and I'll bring the post hole bore up and we'll smash that, and then and then try and get them safe, because that is a good spot, because it's got a mixture of woodland. People don't underestimate the benefit of woodland for bees. It's not all flowers. Yeah. So you've got woodland there, and then there's quite a lot of open pasture there as well. So yeah. I know the dandelions are finished now, but there's,
yeah.
I mean, the bramble won't be that long, will it?
Not after the last couple of years or anything to go. No. 6 weeks at the most, I should imagine.
No, so it won't be long before that's out. Yeah. And that is probably the main honey flow.
Yeah, without doubt around here.
So, and it makes great honey as well. Yeah. But the oilseed rape's finished nearly, isn't it?
Mm.
It's nearly been gone. Yeah. It's been a very strange season, I think. You know, everything seemed to have been on hold because of the wet. And then it's kind of done and dusted within three or four weeks.
Right, we did a podcast a month ago, 6 weeks ago,
yeah.
Where we're like, potatoes don't swim.
No.
And now I'm watering at the allotment.
It's crazy, isn't it? Well, I mean, it's gone from a quagmire at work to a dust bowl in a matter of 10 days.
Yeah.
And that's the nature of clay. And, you know, I know different people have got different soils where they live. And some people are more blessed with more, you know, robust, forgiving soils. But I mean, clay's all right because it's got good nutrients. So it's just about adding that organic matter, which is where I'm getting to.
Break up with them, yeah.
But beekeeping, as far as people, it's not a bad time to start beekeeping.
Great time to start beekeeping.
Either finding a local beekeeping club or getting some equipment or, you know, shadowing someone who does it or buying some books and doing some research. And I know there have been people on the podcast Facebook group who've wanted to get into it, and it'd be nice to hear if they've managed to take it on that next bit, you know. And I think that it is very frightening at the beginning because people feel that they don't know what they're doing. But all I can say is everybody is like that at the beginning.
Yeah.
And you don't know, and you still don't know what we're doing.
I'm still looking in those three colonies on Friday afternoon. And I'm going through it and I'm going,
well, what is going on here?
What on earth is going on here? I've not seen this.
No.
If I've seen it before, not for long enough ago that I don't remember.
Absolutely. And sometimes you find these things out and sometimes you don't. But I think that's one of the beauties of beekeeping, is that it's open to different interpretations and everyone's got their own way of doing things and practices and stuff like that. But at the end of it, it can be very simple beekeeping.
Well, I find generally leaving the bees to it as best as you can, it's the best way to go because they know better than I do.
And then just knocking on the door in August and going, excuse me, would you mind if I have a couple of these?
Come from a tithe, thank you very much. Yeah, absolutely, tax.
But it is nice to feel like we're doing something, because I still think there's an issue with the amount of honeybees locally. I certainly don't think there's as many wild colonies as there used to be.
No,
I really don't.
No, and I would encourage people, if they are out there beekeeping, if they do know of wild colonies, to leave them alone if you can.
Yeah.
You know, leave them be, because the best thing to do then is put a swarm trap up near them. Because if those wild bees have been in there for generations and generations of queens, that's great stock, survivor stock to work from.
Yeah, and that's probably really the most resistant.
Yeah.
To mites and different bee diseases, aren't they?
That's well, exactly I would imagine.
But so it is something that I would encourage people to get into. But there's lots of different routes, and I think if you're on your own and just diving in and doing it all yourself, that is brilliant. But it is a nice thing to do with someone else, isn't it? We enjoy sharing it. And
it's much nicer thing to go together and do it than it is.
Absolutely, and also sometimes there are jobs that have to be done, and if one person can't do them and someone else can, it does make life a little bit easier.
Yeah.
But it's also a great conversation point, and the other thing is honey's great.
Yeah, and the honey we get is really
it's really great. And you know, I know we've been talking about, over the last couple of episodes, we've talked about being self-sufficient in things.
Mm.
And, you know, being self-sufficient in sweet stuff, not sugar, you can probably do with honey.
Yeah. I think you'd have to produce a lot. I was thinking about how much I would use. Let's say I was baking a cake a week using honey instead of sugar.
Yeah.
That's got to be a jar of honey a week just for cakes.
Give over.
Pound of...
I don't think a pound of honey is the same as a pound of sugar.
No, maybe not. Maybe not. I don't know.
I don't think it is. Mm. I've baked bread primarily just using it as an activator.
Mm.
I haven't done much baking with honey, so maybe I'll try that on my next bake.
Even if it was half a pound.
Honey cakes are supposed to be great, aren't they?
Yeah,
but tasty. For the majority of the recipes that I use, where I'm using granulated sugar, so the fruit loaf that I make, that's got, it's supposed to have brown sugar in it, but I use white sugar.
Yeah,
I'm trying to think how much is in that. Can't actually remember offhand.
Well, I think about the sort of standard mix that we do here, which is the, when you get the
two eggs.
I forget what they call it. Two eggs, 4 ounces of sugar, four ounces of flour, four ounces of marge.
Four.
Yeah.
So 4 ounces isn't that much, though, is it?
That's 100 grams. So, so 100 grams of sugar for that. But I would typically double that recipe to make a decent size cake.
Yeah, me too. But so 8 ounces, four, 8 ounces of honey by weight.
Even if it is, it's only half a pound, isn't it?
It's not so bad. Half a jar.
Yeah. I reckon if you used it for everything you do, like if I used honey for my kombucha, if I used honey for brewing, if I used honey for making crumbles, and I did actually the other week, it was lovely, but if you used, if that's all you use rather than sugar, I think you'd need a lot of honey.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know what the difference is, because obviously it's like a liquid or semi-liquid form, and whether you have to compensate with the fluid you put in or the eggs that you put in or whatever. Yeah. So maybe, I think what would probably happen is that you wouldn't be able to make things like you used to make them.
No.
I think you'd find recipes that work. I'm sure that there's a honey sourdough equivalent or a, or a, you know, or a honey sponge cake or a honey cakes or whatever they are. And they probably are different, but equally as nice, just in just what they are.
Right.
I might look up some honey cakes, because I'll be quite interested in trying to have a go at that.
And take some honey with you.
And there is a danger, isn't there, that you do end up with a lot of honey.
Yeah.
And honey does keep well, don't get me wrong, but it can go off in the jar, you know, if, if you're not scrupulous. And I think that it wouldn't, you know, three jars of honey makes a gallon of mead, and I've never really got into it and made it.
Well, I've got a couple of jars I put by for that purpose.
Okay.
That are just, I think they were ones that when we did the settling out, we just left them one year for about 4 weeks or something. Yeah. Just sat on the side.
Yeah.
Dried out a little bit. Got a little bit crystallised, but still made perfectly good mead.
Absolutely superb.
So it's actually in a jar, just sitting there waiting to be done.
Yeah, so we should definitely have a go at doing that. £3, I think.
All right. Well, I've definitely got two. I might have three, but I've definitely got two.
Well, it's just another jar.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
probably got plenty there.
I've got plenty, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it would be nice. And maybe that's something we could ask people who are keeping bees. Maybe they've got any uses for honey. Obviously, it's got all this medicinal stuff. And you can use it for your preserving.
I used it in my elderberry syrup last year.
Honey glazed ham's a thing as well.
Yeah, oxymels I've used it in.
Yep.
Fire cider it goes into.
Yeah, it does.
So all those things you need, you know, good honey in there, it makes a huge difference.
But I think that as all, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say that honey's good for you all the time. Because I think that, you know, it is a carbohydrate.
Tell that to the diabetics.
Yeah, it is. But it's not refined.
No.
And there's no preservatives in it or anything like that. So I think it would be good to explore how it's made what you can make with it and some of the other uses for it. Because I think between sugar and salt, we would be sorely pressed if we couldn't buy them, wouldn't we?
Yeah.
I mean, it would be really tricky, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
And I know, and I've heard of different ways of getting salt and things like that. And it's not something I've ever done. I would be interested to try and do it. I think that like making birch sap, though, I think it takes an awfully long time to get as much as you need.
If it goes down, right? If the brown stuff hits the fan,
yeah.
I'm reopening the salts, as it's known, in my local town, which is where the local park is, which was used to be a salt pan, clearly.
Yeah.
And we'll just dig a little channel.
And I have seen it. I have seen it done on concrete and then brushed up. And they do it in parts of Essex where I'm from, and Maldon is very famous for it, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I've never done it. And I've heard that you can just boil seawater and make salt.
Yeah, I've seen. Carl's done it, I know.
I've never done it, so I would like to try it. I don't know what the return is. I don't know how much you get.
I think Carl did a thing. He's done a video on it, certainly. I think he took I don't know if it was a gallon of seawater or 5 gallons of seawater, and you got about 7 grams of salt.
Yeah.
So you need, it's a lot of boiling, a lot of fuel. So really, realistically, if you're looking to make it to be self-sufficient in it, you probably need a better method than
like the evaporation method.
Like the evaporation method, I would suspect,
because you know, people can argue, but you do need some salt in your diet.
Yeah,
I mean, we could all do eating a lot less. Don't get me wrong, and using different flavourings from natural herbs and things like that. But for the other jobs that it can do, you know, such as the preserving and things like that, I mean, salt. It's such a thing to be able to produce, isn't it?
Yeah.
I would like to be able to do it, but I don't know how it would work if you were in a situation where you. I mean, I know that I've got some in my stores. I can tell you that's because it's such a commodity, isn't it? But if you were in a situation where you couldn't buy it, then even for someone who, if you don't live near the coast, it is quite tricky, isn't it?
Might be even tricky living where I live, mate, wouldn't it? You imagine walking back from the seaside here.
Yeah.
Even though it's only 10 minutes walk away, probably 15 minutes.
You'd do it there, though, wouldn't you?
Well, you'd have to, wouldn't you? But then, you don't know where you'd be at, would you? So how do you get it back?
If that's before you've even thought about the quality of your seawater.
Well, which I know is not great as well. So, you know, not a great combo.
That's interesting, isn't it? I wonder if there are people out there who don't use an awful lot of salt in their diet and
maybe that's something we should be thinking about a little bit more. And then when you do need it, you've got things there.
It's not like you say. It's not so much the salt in the diet, is it? It's the how do you preserve without it? Mm. You know, like curing bacon. How do you make bread without it? How do you know? It's not so much eating it.
You can make bread without salt, but it's not as nice.
There's a reason why people don't.
It isn't as nice, is it?
It's not even close.
I only put a little tiny bit in as well, do you?
Yeah.
How much do you put in?
I put in about 20 grams to a kilo of flour.
What's 20 grams?
0.8 of an ounce.
Tell me in teaspoons, Al. I need to look
at it. I don't know in teaspoons. I've done doing teaspoons. Oh, okay. I'm a measurer. Weigher.
I'm a...
Yeah. Mike just went, chuck it in, kind of action.
Mind you, apart from on my... My focaccia, I load the top of that with olive oil and salt and fresh herbs.
Yeah, well, it needs it, doesn't it?
Anyway, we have rambled a bit there, gone from beast to salt, but we were talking about those commodities that, you know, they're tricky to replace.
Yes.
And so, you know, for someone who's interested in the more prepping side of it, and I think we might talk a bit about that later on, I haven't done anything on that for a little while, and resource building, having the ability to be self-sufficient in sweetener or sweetness is a really, really valuable thing.
Yeah.
You would never be, you'd never not have any friends in a bad situation. Everyone would be around your house.
Yeah.
But just to make things work, like you say, you know, if you don't have, if you haven't got access to sugar and you want to make alcohol, you need it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I don't think you'd ever have a problem.
Even if you've got fruit, you still need it. The only exception from what we do is the cider.
Yeah.
It's the only time we don't add any sugar, but you're brewing anything else, you're adding loads of sugar. That beer I made loads of sugar in it.
Yeah, it did, didn't it?
You know, and you think, well, you need
preserving fruit without sugar is pretty much impossible, isn't it? You can't really make jam without it.
No.
Because it won't settle.
Just dehydrating, I suppose, isn't it? It'd be dehydrating. You could bottle it, but it wouldn't be the same.
Well, it wouldn't set, would it?
No. You wouldn't get a jam. You'd be like, get it, in a liquid.
So it's interesting.
Yeah.
You can't buy honey jam now, I don't think. You can't use honey to make jam because it doesn't set.
That won't set, no.
Which is weird. Yeah. Trying to get my head around it now.
We're going to have to do some experimenting, mate.
Well, I'm going to find a decent honey cakes recipe.
Yeah, that'd be nice. And honey buns.
Honey buns, yeah. Honey cakes, they call them, don't they? So I'm going to try and find some of those. And I actually think that'd be pretty good. I've got a feeling they're going to be quite dense for some reason. Honey scones, I reckon, would be mean, wouldn't they? Oh, yeah, I could do that.
Really good.
Yeah, I think that'd be great. Yeah, honey scones with a bit of clotted cream up on top there. Thanks very much.
Sounds
well,
good.
Well, I like treacle tart, so I'm pretty sure I'd like honey tart.
I can't see any reason why you wouldn't.
So that's where we're at with the beekeeping.
Yeah.
So first steps for people who wanted to get involved in it, I think, would be either to find a local beekeeper, or you could join your local beekeeping group, but they can be quite political.
Yeah.
Or you could try and, like I say, find someone locally who's doing it and see if you can stand alongside them and work alongside them and maybe learn for a little bit, or go on a course.
Yeah.
There's loads of stuff online, but I would start by trying to find someone else who did it. That's how I would do it.
Right.
Would you not?
Yeah, I think so. The association, I know it can be a bit political, ain't it? Probably the best place to start, to be honest.
Yeah,
you get people that have been doing it for a long time, you'll learn some good tricks that way.
Yeah, and you might even be able to pick up a swarm, and you probably get some secondhand gear if you're lucky. You know, a lot of people quite help each other out, don't they, and stuff like that. So it's not beyond the realms of possibility to get yourself set up quite reasonably, because it is expensive to get into.
Yeah.
But the cost of the sundries and the equipment has come down a great amount with the birth of eBay and the internet. You know, certainly getting suits and smokers and hive tools and all of those things are not, I don't think they're that challenging financially. It literally is the cost of the hives and the frames and things like that. And and at the beginning, it's probably easier to do to just get a starter kit.
Yeah.
For a couple of hundred quid, probably, is it?
We did a thing on it probably a couple of years ago now, and I think you can do it cheaper yourself.
Mm.
If you don't quite know what you're doing,
then
it's not the worst place to start. It'll cost you a few quid more, but you'll have everything you're like in here for a while.
Yeah, you won't need a lot more either, would you? No.
No, so it'd be hives and frames and foundation, I guess, if you're going to go
and,
down that route.
You know, from my experiences today, where I've been working with a new beekeeper, don't be put off if things go wrong in that first year as well, because it's very easy to read into it that you're doing something wrong.
Yeah.
But sometimes if your bees have not gone through the winter, or your colony's not been that strong, or your queen's gone out on a mating flight and got eaten by a bird. Mm. I mean, that has nothing to do with you whatsoever.
Kind of luck,
it's just how it is.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've spoken about this before quite a lot, and for me, you're looking to try and build up to 5 colonies to build some resistance, resilience rather.
Yeah.
Because I think when you've got one colony, the failure of that colony is 100% failure rate, and you're about to start, and then that's what puts people off. They invest loads of money, and then they go out of it because they've lost all their investment. Rather than going like we did last year when we lost all those colonies, and to an extent this year when we've lost a load of colonies, to go, oh, okay, so we lost some colonies.
Yeah,
but we'll bounce back. And guess what? We already are, and it's not even the end of May yet.
No, we've got another 8 weeks probably of swarming, haven't we?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
So, yeah, and if you can keep two at least, definitely together makes things a lot easier. But I only kept 2 colonies for many, many years. Mm. Many years, probably 10 years.
Mm.
And I was very lucky in that I had a colony that I think used to supersede itself. So it never swarmed or anything like that. And I was really lucky with that colony we had for a long time.
Yeah.
But it wasn't until I got the second one and put it next to it. And one was really docile and the other one was mad aggressive. But they both produced okay. And but those two colonies kept me and my family in honey for all of the time up until I met yourself and we started doing it together. So I can't say that it doesn't work, you know, having 2 colonies and things like that. And and you know, if people are looking for a source of income, you know, and taking things further, bees, honey, particularly the bees, but also helping out people when they've got a swarm, which you then inevitably will be called to deal with wasp problems. You know, there is an income stream there for people, you know, and if you're happy to drive around and pick swarms up or help people and deal with them, you'll find that, you know, the opportunities arise from that, you know.
Yeah.
And let's just say that if we'd have put all of our swarms that we caught last year into nuke boxes and sold them, how much money would we have made just out of that? We'd have made a lot of money, wouldn't we?
You won't get as much for a swarm that you've caught this year rather than an overwintered swarm.
No.
But I reckon you probably could easily get 80 to 100 quid for each of them.
So
there's a grand sitting there in swarms we caught last year.
And so, you know, obviously it would be, if they were overwintered, you're probably going to get double that at least. And then with the price of the house itself, you know, 200 quid isn't unheard of. And
200 to 250 for a 6-frame nuke is what I've seen online.
Right.
And that's from like local beekeepers that have overwintered nukes, you know. So you're looking, two to 250. And that seems pretty reasonable actually, because that's what they were 5 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, when you...
So we should definitely try and do that.
We keep saying every year, man. We keep every year.
Well, last year we didn't have any colonies in nukes.
No.
We hived them all out. And perhaps we should have kept some in nuke boxes and then maybe they would have found it easier to move around, get to their stores. So maybe if we get some colonies back end of June and July, maybe leave 3 or 4 in nukes and sell. Either take them through and then either use them to replace our own stock if ours don't overwinter, or sell them on.
Because
in this day and age, having different funding streams is really important, isn't it?
Anyway,
that's bee chat for the
day. Should we we'll make a move inside?
We'll go inside now, mate, and
talk a few more bits. Yeah,
have a nice cup of tea.
Nice one, let's do that.
And a honey cake.
That sounds like a plan. Okay, ladies and gents, and we're back, and we had a bit of a discussion earlier about trying to change things up a bit. So the last few ones we've done kind of our self-sufficiency series, and I'd like to come and revisit that a bit later on.
We've talked a lot about self-sufficiency, but we've also just talked quite mainly about vegetables. Really.
Well, mostly we've been growing vegetables, so most of what we've been doing is mostly what we've talked about. So I think I'd like to take an episode off of that for a bit. It's a bit of a strange time to do it because I've been doing loads and there's loads to talk about. But at the same time, I think probably some of what we want to say is going to come out in the way we want to go today.
It will, and we'll probably talk about it last month and next month.
Yeah, it's fairly likely in 2 or 3 weeks' time we next sit down to have a chat. We'll talk about growing stuff because it's be mostly what we've been doing.
Growing, sowing, planting, weeding and watering.
Yeah, that's pretty much what we've been doing. And watering, I mean, mad that we'd be watering after all that rain, but there we are. So what I wanted to do today, we've recently had a couple of questions and quite lengthy questions on the Facebook group. And what I thought it'd be nice to do is just to address those. And I actually started writing a response to one of them. And I thought, you know what? This will make a really nice podcast episode for us to get together and just talk about it.
Yeah.
Because there's some things in there that the two, particularly these two posts that I've picked out, that are going to be relevant to everybody that's listening, I imagine.
Oh, I think
certainly lots of people that are listening. So, shall we start first with, I think it's, I'm not sure how it's pronounced exactly, but Jana Sarah. Mm. And she's put a post up on there with some lovely pictures of her kids and that. And what looks like an allotment.
Yeah.
And basically going, help! Yeah. I'm overwhelmed. Yeah. What do I do?
And I think that quite a few people have answered. And I think there was a general consensus that don't worry. Yeah. And for anyone who's taken over an allotment, anyone who's got squeezed on time,
yeah,
anyone who's went there 2 weeks ago and it looked quite manageable and now you've gone back and everything's, all the weeds have up to, it is literally about taking your time and doing one bit at a time,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah.
And getting some wins, I would suggest.
When I looked at it, you know, for me, it looked like it was an allotment plot. And there'll be some rules on an allotment plot about how much you're supposed to cultivate, particularly if you're taking it over new. So if you're taking it over as a new plot this year, it's likely that the Allotment Society will lay out an expectation of it being in cultivation within a certain period of time.
Yeah.
And obviously when you go away, and I've experienced this myself this year, I've taken on the new plot and I've gone and looked at it and gone, no, it's not too bad. And then I've gone back after that rain stopped and the sun came out and I've gone, oh.
There's a bit of a jungle here.
All of a sudden, I've got a massive job on my hands. Yes. Yeah. So it's certainly about dividing it up into manageable chunks.
Yeah. And there were some raised beds on hers, which actually works out really well.
And I thought they looked really good.
They did look really good, yeah. And there is a tendency that when you start pulling up couch grass in particular and some of those really pernicious weeds, isn't there? Mm. You know, which have just got so many roots which lie under the soil and are going everywhere, nettles and... Also, creeping buttercup's probably my least favourite.
Yeah.
There is a tendency to be very overwhelmed and almost think, well, I'm going to just dig everything out and just chuck it all.
Yeah.
And I think that rather than doing lots of little bits, you're better off either dividing that bed in half or just getting all hands on deck to just blitz that one bed, even if it takes a whole day.
Well, I can tell you that I've been going through this, the couch grass in particular, because my new plot's got loads of it all over it. And I can see why the fella that's giving it up has given it up.
Yeah.
Right? Because it is like literally it was like digging up my lawn in a couple of places. Really, yeah. And I literally would like spend an hour and I've maybe moved back a metre and a half.
Right.
You know, trying to dig through all these weeds and get the worst of it out and keep the best of the soil.
Yeah.
And so, yes, I think regular, little and often is really important in that scenario, because if I was to dig that all day, I'd be knackered.
Yeah.
And I might have a sore back for a week afterwards. Yeah, whereas if I do what I've been doing, which is about 8 o'clock in the evening when everyone else is like chilling out or going to bed or in my house, there's not much going on, I'll go up the allotment.
Mm.
And the light evenings are great for it.
Yeah.
Because then by the time it gets dark, I can't be up there for more than
And it's not too hot either, is it?
It's not too hot. Even when it's been sunny, it's been nice.
Yeah. So that's my phone going crazy.
Yeah.
There's someone telling me about couch grass.
Oh, okay. And so I can go and just dig it out, right?
Yeah.
The problem you've got then is what do you do with that?
Yeah.
Because that will grow if you put it in conditions where it can grow. So you've got to try and think about managing that. But there is another option with couch grass in particular. Mm. I've had huge success with the no-dig with the couch grass. And what was suggested to me was that it grows in the top 4 inches of the soil, the roots. Yeah. Rhizomes are they? The running roots that go underground.
Yeah.
They grow in the top 4 inches of the topsoil. So if you can bury it deep enough, it doesn't come back up.
Yeah, okay.
And that has proven to be reasonably true.
Okay.
You know,
what about if you use a weed suppressant mat on top?
Well, I would suggest not using a weed suppressant mat, because having done it over the years and then having to try and dig them back out again, it's a pain in the neck.
Mm.
But if you did the whole no-dig route with it, with the good layer of cardboard and then a good thick layer of mulch or compost on top, that will be enough to stop it coming back up again. And if it does start to come back through, you hoe it off regularly and it weakens it and it will stop it. It's not so effective for things like dandelions.
Mm.
Although, you know, if you look at Charles Dowding's way of doing it, he seems to have very little trouble with stuff like that. So I guess it's just about keeping on top of your hoeing then at that point.
And having an awful lot of compost.
And that's the problem, which is where the expense comes in. So it might not be realistic. But certainly breaking it up into sections and maybe doing some of it like that, and some of it like in more traditional, conventional dig it over method, little bit by little bit, you get on top of it.
Yeah. So back in the day, it would have been double digging, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
That's what you would have done. You'd have double dug it. And it's a slightly unfortunate term, you'd have done bastard trenching, which is what is like triple digging, really, isn't it? I've only ever done that twice.
Yeah.
I think I did it once for an assessment that we were on.
Yeah.
Never again.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, why would you do that?
And obviously there's a lot of argument now about turning second soil, subsoil up and bringing it up to the surface and mm-hmm. digging it all in.
Yeah.
But in this case, if you don't mind the graft, digging is not the same as removing weeds, is it? Because what you're going to do is you're actually going to be, in all intents and purposes, you're going to plough it with a spade.
Yes, yeah.
You're going to dig so deep down and invert the sods upside down so that they actually die.
Yeah.
But what you'll get left with is subsoil on the top, which isn't, you know, obviously what you want to be sowing into. But if you then can enrich that with some compost, but you would really should have done it in the autumn.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
But it might be that you don't decide to grow all of in everything and you have a go at that. But it is graft, isn't it?
It is. And I think, you know, I was looking at it, the first thing you need to do is get some stuff in the ground that looks reasonable. Get something growing in there, because that's going to make you feel better straight away.
Yeah, of course it is, yeah.
And then you're going to get some crop. And I think the second thing they need to do is to set some realistic aims.
Yeah.
At this stage of the year, if your whole plot, like mine, is a bit overgrown...
Mow it or trim it
is a really good starting point. But you're still going to have to accept that you probably aren't going to get all of that into cultivation for a summer crop.
No, okay? Probably not.
I'm trying really hard to, and I'm helping to solve that problem by having... As I've got here, you've seen my greenhouses tonight, it's in my house, something, but I've got plug plants ready to go in.
Yeah.
If I can get that soil turned soon enough that the plug plants can go out, then I've got a chance of getting the summer crop. But realistically, there'll be going to be some bits of the plot that will be sacrificed this year that I just won't get around to doing what I would like to do with it. And I think that's okay. Mm. That's okay. First year on the plot, I've got no problem with that.
I wonder whether there's any, because I've got, obviously the rotavator I've got would just chop all of those things into oblivion, but there's a danger that they would root again, isn't there?
Oh, yeah.
But knowing that it's not going to rain for a fortnight, you might have a chance of them getting frazzled, mightn't you?
I think if you could do it in the next couple of days.
You could do it that way.
Forecast of the weekend is really hot and sunny.
Absolutely would batter everything that you chopped, and they probably wouldn't. If it's dry enough in your plot, it depends on the local conditions.
Stuff on the surface, the problem is going to be that if you've dug it to a spate or fork depth, 8 inches or whatever that is, what's down in the bottom of there is still going to be all right.
Yeah, and if you've dug it to that deep, you might as well just turn the sods over and do double digging anyway, right? Double digging is hard work, but...
I wouldn't bother.
No, a lot of people don't anymore.
I think if you... If you dug it over conventionally, removed as much of the weed and particularly the
We should explain what we mean by that. So double digging is where you would remove literally the top spit, which is the depth of your spade, put it to one side and then turn over the next one or get it out and then put the top one in and put the other one on top.
And you can do it in sections, blocks. A bit like a typewriter, old-fashioned typewriter. So you do one row and then you move the next row back and you move the next row back as you're digging it. You can do
it's
it.
It's a very old-fashioned, traditional method of doing it. And like I say, it's fallen out of favour because probably it's too hard, if we're being really honest. People haven't got the time. But also people have found that really you're inverting the soil and bringing subsoil to the top, not that top layer of humus, which is humus. Hummus, I don't know how to say it. Hummus is made with chickpeas.
I don't know. I think there's a dirt hummus as well.
Yeah, The structure of that top layer is really important, isn't it? And so much so, you've got people now who say don't touch it at all. And I understand that about aeration and the movement of water and bringing perennial weed seeds to the surface. Things like that, you know, obviously I get all of that.
Yeah.
But those old boys did get a lot of stuff off the Everett allotments, didn't they? You can't deny it. But I think they probably had more time.
I don't know if they had more time, but they certainly put more hours into it. And I think, you know, going back to when I first took the allotment on, they were saying 4 hours a week for a full plot. Well, I've got a full plot now.
Yeah.
I have two separate sites, which if anything is worse.
That's under management though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Once it's going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Once it's going. I mean, obviously I'm having to put a lot of effort in now. In the last week, I've probably been through it four times.
Yeah. So I think those older generations also were probably more liberal with their manuring as well, if I'm being totally honest.
Yeah.
They probably didn't rely on chemical means to enhance the crops, and I think there was a certain amount of balance in that. I don't think many people use animal manure on their plots as they used to.
No, not access to it. So, I mean, think about my great granddad again. He had chickens in the garden. He worked on the farm where they used horses to plough the fields.
Everything
when
was done,
kid.
Wasn't it? Yeah,
you know. So there's plenty of manure around, and
we get green waste, don't we? That's our equivalent.
Yeah.
which I'm not sure has got the same content.
Well, it's got different content. It's got different nutrients. I'm not sure it's not necessarily worse. It's just different.
No, yeah, I agree.
But I think there's temptations perhaps to double dig it. I don't think you would be doing that. I think that that would be enough to put most people off, as you say. Mm. But I think if you turn the soil, took the worst of the weeds out, particularly if you could do some of it this week, that the heat will help.
That heat will really help.
Will really help. But then being prepared to do it again later on in the year.
Yeah.
So perhaps you could grow a crop now,
yeah.
be prepared to weed a lot, and then do it again in the autumn.
Mm.
And then I'd be tempted to cover it with something if you're not going to grow through the winter.
Mm. And what would happen if you covered, you know, the beds that you might not be able to do this year, if you covered them without having access to loads of manure or compost, let's just say you haven't got that, or a car or whatever. You know, if I got something like three or four layers of cardboard, it used to be carpet in the day, but you're not allowed to do that anymore.
Yeah.
If I could get some three or four layers of cardboard and lay that down on top with some bricks and stones on it, will that kill the weeds over a year?
I think if it's dry, yes. The problem will be if it's wet, it'll decompose itself, won't it? I was just thinking as you were talking, if all you did was strip it right down as low as you can
and then cover it
with clear plastic.
Right.
That would make a hell of a difference in this heat, because that will burn.
Yeah.
The plastic will magnify and will burn whatever's underneath growing, and it will kill it off. It will die.
Right.
Really rapidly. Even more rapidly than black plastic will at this time of year. And that's not a bad way of doing it.
Okay. So clear plastic over... So strim and clear plastic.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I was just trying to think of ways to, you know, so that in the spring you could save yourself having to do the really hard digging if you've managed to eradicate things without having to resort. Because the other thing you could do is spray it.
Yeah, yeah. Couldn't you? I wouldn't recommend it, but
I certainly wouldn't recommend it in allotment on a windy day.
No.
Really annoy your neighbours.
Might not allow it.
No, but a lot of people do still though, don't they?
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes if you have to do it once at the beginning, I understand that for people, you know. But I think if I'd have taken over an allotment like that, and I probably would have used the water permeable membrane.
Yeah.
Mypex, I think it's called.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd have put two or three layers of that down on the understanding that I was going to get it up in the late spring next year.
You have to be diligent with that, because once the weeds start getting into that and growing through it, it becomes so heavy.
I might have put cardboard under it.
Yeah.
Or I probably would have. If I could get enough cardboard to cut and lay under it, and then I'd put the black Mypex down, because it's so effective at seemingly so effective at eradicating the light.
Yeah.
And then I think that you would still have some real blanched specimens underneath it when you took it up.
Thistles in particular.
I think, 6-7 months under that, when you came round to next spring, I think you would have given yourself a really nice lot of soil. And I think, you know, a high percentage of the weeds will have died off.
Yeah.
You'd have killed them. But so a combination of these things would probably work. You know, the beds that you can't deal with now, you still got to do something about.
Yeah.
But concentrate your, you know, weed eradication and your digging on maybe one or two.
Mm.
Get some cardboard. And when we say cardboard, I'm talking like, you know, boxes that TVs come in and stuff like that. Big, thick ones. Yeah. And then cut them and weigh them down and get them on. And then some black plastic.
Cover that with compost, you can grow straight into that.
Yeah.
Regardless of the weeds underneath. Yeah. So if you can get a deep enough layer of compost on top of your cardboard.
But that's a lot of...
But it'll be potentially very expensive. But if you can't, just putting the cardboard down will help, or just putting clear plastic down will help.
Yeah, I've heard of clear plastic. I didn't know that would work.
Yeah, the section that I've got, I've done a mixture, because it's what I had, and they're already up there. There's that one big, I've got one big run. It's probably about 10 metres long and 1.5 metres wide, I should think. Something, 8 metres maybe, something in those lines.
Mm.
So there's a big old space.
Mm.
And it is literally completely weeded. It's grass. It's like a lawn. It looks like a lawn. If you mowed it down, it would look like a lawn. And so knowing that I've got no time to deal with that right now, and knowing that the other bits are more priority, what I've done is I've covered that with a mixture of black plastic and clear plastic, because it's what I had. And it is working to weaken the weeds. So when I sort of peel back...
So how does it work? Tell me.
The black plastic works by excluding light.
Both of them work by excluding moisture, I would imagine. But they get quite humid underneath.
Yeah. And obviously then what you get is then the heat from the sun will help to burn, and particularly under the clear plastic, that works really well, especially with weed seedlings. So one of the things I've seen done is where people dig it over, and then rather than planting in it, you cover it then with clear plastic. So then when the weed seedlings germinate, you've just exposed,
they immediately get fried
underneath it. Yeah.
Okay.
So it's much more effective with those, but it will still work, I reckon, under under sort of regular grass. You know yourself, you put something on the lawn,
yeah,
and you leave it there for a little bit,
yeah, it dies.
But everything is underneath, it dies, yeah? Yeah. So if you exclude the light and keep that really well weighed down, it will kill it eventually.
Yeah, I think it will.
And what it, if nothing else, what it will do is buy you the time to deal with the rest of the plot.
Yeah. So if you were then, so that's the first thing. What quick gains would you go for then?
Well, I think there's some plot, and that, those pictures that I saw, I definitely would be just planting something in some of those spaces, particularly things that are good weed suppressors themselves. So spuds, probably a little bit late now.
Well, I don't know, mate.
Main crop, maybe.
You definitely would get away with.
Yeah. And I think spuds have got a natural weed suppressant effect. So I'd be tempted to put some of those in.
Really good cover, haven't they?
Yeah.
I would definitely put potatoes in. I don't think it's too late. All I would do is I would probably really look very carefully at trying to find something which had good late blight resistance, because you're going to push your season back.
Yeah.
So getting your SARPOs that we've spoke about.
Yeah.
I think it would be more important than just getting anything. Because some potatoes, knowing that they're going to be probably a full 4 weeks late on harvest now, I'd get something that had better resistance to what is going to be the curse of all people, especially at an allotment.
Yeah. I'd be tempted to do some salad leaf, but I'd be tempted to do it really close together. So there's very little space between. So again, you're excluding light from the surface of the soil, so the weeds that are there are going to struggle to get up.
Mm-hmm.
And when they do come up, you'll see them. So things like bindweed, dandelions will grow through that.
Yeah.
Pooch grass will grow through it as well. But you'll see it.
Yeah.
So you can then chase that down to the base and then just pull it. And that's a relatively simple thing to do.
Yeah, and quick growing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Things like that. I mean, anything, you're going to struggle with anything root bound, really, though. Yeah. You know, carrots and even radishes and things like that to a certain extent.
Pumpkins, squashes we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, I think the pumpkins are really good because they're really... they're really quick growing and they really shade out quite a lot of perennial weeds because of the size of their leaves underneath.
Courgettes the same, for the same reason.
And let's be honest, you know, they tolerate quite poor soils, don't they? And they don't mind putting their roots down really deep and stuff like that. But, you know, even if you had access to some manure or mulch, you could literally put that on the top and grow your stuff in it. Yep. It's not too hot for them, is what I'm trying to say.
No. And I think the other thing about doing things like pumpkins is typically you're going to plant them and then you might water them occasionally and there's not much else to be done, which frees you then up to deal with the rest of the plot.
Yeah,
now, one of the problems I've had this week is having to water the plot has meant that half an hour or so I've spent watering is half an hour less I've spent digging.
Digging stuff up.
Yeah. I think that's important.
I agree. But just so that you don't feel alone there, you know, my raspberry run has been absolutely overrun with perennial weeds, particularly buttercup and geranium, wild geraniums. So I thought most of my raspberries had actually died as well.
Oh, really?
But it's only literally in the last 3 or 4 days that some of the autumn fruiting raspberries have actually started to show any growth at all.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And you know, when I looked at them, they looked dead. I thought I'd lost loads of them.
So mine, because I've got autumn fruiting in the new plot, and they're looking really good.
Mm.
But that was the first plot I weeded.
Okay, and whereas mine still need weeding. And when I put those plants in last year, I couldn't water them, and so the root structure on them is going to be weak.
Yeah.
However, what I did do is the things that did really badly last year, the black currants.
Yeah.
The what else have I got in there? The gooseberries and the blueberries, they really struggled last year to get a hold because it was so damp. So in the spring, I laid my PEX down and I planted them all through and they all look great.
Okay.
And some of that I actually think is to do with the moisture conservation underneath there.
Yeah. It's got to help.
It really has helped, I think.
Yeah.
And also it suppressed all the weeds around. There's a little bit coming out of the hole that they're, you know, growing through.
Yeah.
But you can't do that with raspberries because they don't sprout from the same place.
No.
And I've been looking into this because out of all of the fruit that I've planted, the raspberries have really struggled because I struggled to keep the weeds down.
Yeah.
And so I'd created probably a 3 foot wide bed with the rotavator and it was weed free.
Mm.
And then I planted my plants into it. But of course, what's happened now is that obviously there's loads of perennial weeds in it. And my worry is that I can't mow up to the sides of it because I might hit emerging raspberry canes. Some have died, don't get me wrong, things like that.
Yeah.
But I think I'm just going to spend a whole day Yeah. And I can't hoe them out.
No.
That is a mattock job.
Yeah.
Taking off sods of soil, sods of grass. So I'll start at the top and work my way down and try and find as many living ones as I can. And then I'll have to think. But when I went to my local fruit farm and I just said, look, you know, I'm struggling with this because they grow in rows as well. And, you know, I'm looking at the base of their rows and I'm thinking, well, they're just growing it four times a year. They spray
four times a year.
Yeah. Selective weed killer.
Yeah.
And I just don't want to do it.
No.
And so the alternative is graft. Yeah. So, you know, I feel this lady's pain.
Yeah, well, don't we all. And I think that's one thing, is you've hit on something there as well, is that I wouldn't be planting raspberries or strawberries in those patches until you're reasonably confident they're weed-free.
Well, what just was amazing is, in the depth of winter, I rotivated one strip out when we'd had a run of dry but very cold weather.
Yeah.
So all I did was take the top of the grass off with the rotivator.
Yeah.
And I certainly did not dig it all over, and it wasn't all beautiful and lovely. I literally took maybe the first inch off. But because it was the winter, it all died.
Yeah.
And then I mypex that sheet.
Yeah.
And when I've gone to plant my strawberries in that soil, there's not one perennial weed under there.
Yeah.
And what you can also see is that the whole of the surface is pockmarked with earthworms because the moisture conservation has meant that they've been able to come to the surface.
Yeah.
So I've got more than anywhere else on there, quite a friable, it's clay, don't get me wrong, but it's workable.
That black plastic that we've used in the past is brilliant for that, for overwinter.
So that's the one that the moisture will pass through?
No,
that's the one I'm talking about.
This one's impermeable, so this is literally like black polythene, like a, you could use overlaying, if you like opened out a compost bag and then overlapped them, you could use that, but I've just happened to have some big sheets of this black plastic that we got years ago. I just keep reusing it. Got a few holes in it now, but whatever, get the odd bit. It doesn't do quite the same job.
So the one that I've got isn't the fibre one.
Right.
It's the one that's made out of thin strands.
Woven one, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
And that's the one that perennial weeds will come through eventually.
Yeah.
But if you keep the sides down, and also if you keep the top clear.
Yes.
So you don't let soil build up or grass cuttings build up on top. It's actually all right.
I've had some trouble with that because I put some in my garden underneath some like flowering plants.
Mm.
And I covered it in wood chip. And then, of course, the weeds grew in the wood chip down through the mypex. Yeah. And then
the wood chip just turns into soil.
Yeah, right? And I was literally just like cutting sections out to pull it out. It was horrific.
Yeah, because it goes all into strands, doesn't it?
Yeah, so you're right. And it's not nice to look at. So I wouldn't, in your scenario, I get the sense.
It's commercial
of it.
More, yeah. Isn't it?
I get a sense of it. I wouldn't do it in my garden like that. And I wouldn't recommend people doing it in the allotment like that. But it might suit some people, at least in the short term.
You've reminded me of something.
Go on.
I managed to get hold of my neighbour.
Which one?
The one who I wanted to ask about is seed compost.
I'll get in. Go on.
Right. So I always know when he's...
I need a pen.
No, you won't need a pen.
All right, okay.
So I always know when he's been out because when I go on the walk up my lane, which is a sunken lane so that there's overhanging trees, I can see that he's taken his wheelbarrow up there and dug all along the side.
Mm.
Right? And so it's a lane without a pavement, okay? And it's surrounded by deciduous trees.
Yeah.
Okay. So what you get is probably leaf mold building up over year. Anyway, it was relayed the road about 5 years ago.
Mm.
And so for a couple of years, I noticed he didn't take anything off there.
Yeah.
So when I saw him at the weekend, I said, I wanted to ask you, because I've seen you've been up, and this is what you grow your, start your seeds off in. And he said, yes, this is what I use. So I said, is there a recipe? And he went, no. It's that. So what it is leaf mould.
Right.
That's all it is,
mm.
right? And it must be very well rotted, right?
Yeah.
So he's got deciduous leaf mould, which is falling down into the side of the road.
Yeah.
And he goes up there and he puts it through a sieve, riddler. And he said, the only thing I would do is if it was really wet, I'd put some sand in it.
Okay.
And that's it. And he has been growing vegetables longer than I've been alive.
Yeah.
Right? But that is all he grows in. No weeds come in it. That's it.
That's amazing, isn't it?
And when I look at it, it is beautiful looking stuff, I have to say. It just looks like compost, obviously.
Yeah.
But it is literally just leaf mould. Because there isn't anything else there.
No.
I can't imagine that there's even any sort of, you know, silt getting run off down the road or anything like that. It is literally just an earth bank with a wall and then leaf mould falling down on top.
That's really easy to replicate that, though, isn't it? If you're just making leaf mould. And actually, leaf mould's great for sowing because it's
inert.
Yeah, and it's not got a great nutrient in it, but no, seeds don't need it for the first 4 weeks or so, 6 weeks maybe.
And I think that he starts off, and he grows his little onion sets in them, and he grows them, but that is all it does. All he said was that if it was really sort of claggy or wet, he would run some sand through it just to improve the drainage.
So does he write it down, or does he just let you collect it off the road?
He goes along the road with his wheelbarrow, shovels it in his wheelbarrow, goes home, puts it through his riddler, and then sows straight into it.
Wow.
No storage or nothing like that. And he does it every year.
Yeah.
And he fills up green crates with it and grows, and he grows onions in it to completion.
Oh, wow.
So he grows onions, set onions overwintering.
Yeah.
So they don't get very big, the size of a ping pong ball.
Yeah.
But he grows hundreds of them.
Yeah.
And they're happy as Larry in there.
Amazing.
That's bonkers, isn't it?
Amazing. I've been buying different types of compost because I said to you last time, the one I normally get, I couldn't get. The one I've got is very clearly mostly leaf mould. And I now finally managed to get hold of some of the other stuff I normally use, the New Horizon. And that's very clearly coir based.
Ah, oh, right, okay.
You can tell the difference in the quality. I'm not sure that necessarily the leaf mouldy one has been better for sowing seeds in this time. But it's a bit anecdotal at the moment, but I'll keep an eye on that.
Yeah, well, I mean, if for me, knowing that trick now, I will have a go at that.
Yeah.
Because it's a lot of money, compost, isn't it?
I've spent a fortune on compost.
And I'm not saying that, you know, you could exploit that to the nth degree and, go up and probably fill up two beds of it. But then it'd be gone, that resource.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the ability, if I was struggling, to go up, look where he's dug. Mm. And I mean, it looks like peat, you know, when you dig into it. It's got a lovely, you know, it leaves a clean edge with a spade. It's proper compost. Yeah. It doesn't look like leaf mould anymore. Yeah. I don't know how many years he's going down there, you know, but it's not, you know, it's only a spade's depth probably. Yeah. But it would be worth trying it, wouldn't it? And certainly it would be nice even going up there before the leaf fall and top dressing your beds or something like that.
Yeah, that'd be really nice.
And using that natural resource. And I love those old tricks like that.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, plants want to grow in soil.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we can get all technical about different nutrient levels, it's not hard, is it?
No,
yeah,
simply. No, if plants can grow, they'll grow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whether you want them to or not.
And you know, if we just go back a very short amount of time in history, everyone was growing vegetables.
Yeah.
And there were no garden centres.
No, quite.
There weren't any.
No.
You couldn't buy a soil testing kit. You couldn't, you know, you probably had access to manure and maybe you could get leaf mould or I presume you could make your own topsoil by inverting sods and you probably had straw and organic matter like that. But you probably kept all your seeds every year, self-seeds.
Yeah.
So,
And people survived, right?
We have made it pretty complicated, haven't we?
Yeah. Massively complicated. So I think the message then for Janicera on the Facebook group then is give yourself a bit of a break. Yeah. Find some easy wins.
Yeah.
Chunk it up. Make it more manageable. If you can get some help, get some help.
Yeah.
But don't fret too much about having to do it all at once.
I'd grow a wigwam of beans.
Would you?
Yeah, I'd clear off a 6x6 foot space and plant a big wigwam of beans because it looks great.
Yeah, it does, yeah.
And nothing gives you more joy than... And once they're established, they'll
grow. Easy enough to weave round as well at the bottom.
Yeah, they'll love it. Well, to be honest with you, I might make a wigwam of beans and I might leave one of the canes out so my kids would crawl in and out of there like a teepee.
Oh.
And they would keep the weeds
Send
quite
the kids
well.
Up the mine.
They would keep the weeds down quite well, I think, actually. And then they've got somewhere to play in,
which
is like a living wigwam.
I like
but
that.
While they're in there... You could put a little mat down on the floor for them as the base.
I might be tempted to do it with sticks rather than canes if the kids are going in.
Yeah,
just give it a bit of rigidity.
That's it. Probably right. Yeah. definitely do some of those things that give you some of those wins. And if you can, get hold of enough weed suppressant or light suppressant, cardboard, matting, compost, whatever, and then just put those ones down and then come back to them next year.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, it will really help you out. And
give yourself a break. Sometimes you just have to go change your expectations and it makes it all a whole lot more manageable. Right, so there was another question, wasn't there? Do you want to grab that on the Facebook group?
The next
Sharon McCarg, wasn't it?
She was talking about, primarily she was talking about canning.
Yeah.
And I think she'd had a issue with one of the, I think it was rhubarb that was canning, and noticed that it slipped in and there were some bubbles or something like that. That's way more your special... I think the rule of canning, though, is if it doesn't look great, don't try and can it.
Basically, if you get canning wrong, you can die. So if you're not sure, Eat that one first. Yeah, eat that one first. And preferably within a reasonable amount of time. It depends what's gone in there. I forget what it was. Was it stewed rhubarb or something?
I think it was.
I think if it was jam, you'd be okay.
Yeah.
It wouldn't keep as long as the other, so I'd be tempted to use it first.
Okay.
If it's like stewed rhubarb and things like that that don't have a particularly long shelf life naturally, then...
I think that's what it was. Yeah, I think it was definitely something to do with
rhubarb. I certainly wouldn't be looking to store that shelf stable. I'd be looking to keep that in the fridge and eat it as soon as possible. In that scenario,
which is fair enough,
because I don't think I'd be taking any risks with that.
Yeah, you're not as risky as me, are you?
No, I wouldn't be. Eating, you know, if it's got mold on
one
it,
one of the jars fell it. Over yeah. and re-uprighted it. Some of the air bubbles plopped into the water. Doesn't mean it won't be suitable for storage.
If it's sealed, depends. What was it? Stewed rhubarb.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't be taking a risk. I'd be refrigerating that stuff and eating it. But then, bearing I'm no expert, that's just what I would do in that scenario.
Yeah, I think it'd be okay. Yeah. But the second half of her question was about tomatoes and chilies, which were failing to thrive.
Yeah.
Which I think is something that could be a combination of different things. And she said that hers have got stuck at the cotyledon stage, which is where they've got those seed leaves out, isn't it? And then not gone on from there. All I can say is that I've struggled really to germinate all of those hot crops. So much so that I had to resort to finding a local grower for some chilies.
Yeah.
And I'm probably still a few sweet peppers short. But what's happened is over the last week, all of those trays which had stuff in which I thought had not germinated have all germinated. Okay. It's just not been hot enough.
No.
And that's in a propagating box that I made with double glazed window.
Wow, okay.
With heat mats inside. Yep. And I think that it... Because I was thinking, well, I think I've got a dodgy pack of seeds here.
Yeah.
And I know that she was talking about maybe having some slightly inert compost or something like that. But honestly, I think that a lot of people have struggled with germinating crops in their propagators. And then, but not always getting them to go, but just they've just been a bit slow.
Well, I think they've been slow. But if you think about the weather, I was watching some... weather report the other day, and the fellow was saying, look, average for May, we're very slightly below average temperatures for May across the UK, but obviously that massive regional variation. But what has happened is there's been very much fewer sunlight hours.
Yeah.
So it's been daylight hours, but there's not been the sunlight because it's been so overcast. Yeah. And so it's not been as hot. And when you think about chilies, tomatoes, pumpkins, sweet corn, I'm thinking 20 degrees plus for them to germinate.
18 to 21.
And it needs to stay consistent there.
And mine has definitely not been consistent.
Well, we had, what was it, about a week ago, there was a threat frost, of a frost at my parents' place just up the road.
So I think that everything is late this year, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And the trouble is that if you haven't got your chilies to germinate now, or your peppers, you're going to struggle if we have an early autumn, aren't you?
Yep.
Getting the length of time. Yep. If you're growing in a polytunnel, you're probably going to be fine.
Yep.
Or a greenhouse. But... if it was me and I was someone who maybe did a lot of things indoors and outdoors, I might be thinking, well, I actually can't guarantee the outdoor tomatoes or the outdoor chilli. So I would be changing my plans a bit to make sure that the premium space inside my plastic powerhouse, maybe I'm going to put a few more peppers in there, whereas I might risk them outside or chilies or tomatoes. So I think that you've got to bear that in mind in that things might move on now because we've got that level of warmth and sunshine, but it might come back to bite you around the end of September or the end of August, really, when things start to tail off. So maybe just change where you're going to grow things a little bit. I know that I only sowed my sweet corn last week. Yeah. I only sowed some of my squashes today.
Yeah.
And it goes back to that thing is that when you look on the back of the seed packet and it says sow May to June, you don't have to sow in May.
No.
And that's a whole 8 weeks of difference in time. And
I think it depends what it is because I know that...
I keep thinking it's summer now, but it's only the third week of May.
Yeah.
It's only the third week of May.
But I know that, you know, if people have been watching Charles Dowding, for example, and sweet corn is one that sticks in May for some reason, he would say that by mid-May, that's probably the latest time you want to be sowing sweet corn.
Yeah.
And obviously we're past that now.
Yeah.
And I know from my own experience that I've sown sweet corn, similar to you. I've got really patchy germination on the first sowings that I did early May, which would be in the middle of the set time that he would suggest you should be sowing sweet corn. And that the ones that I sowed a week ago aren't showing yet as well. And so I'm looking at them panicking a little bit, like, is the sweet corn going to be okay? And you know, chances are I'll be fine, right? And actually, I could continue to sow it for a lot longer yet. And it will still be okay.
I think the difference between you and I, the difference between us and other people is you can keep yours in a greenhouse,
yep.
in a pot,
yep.
for 5 weeks,
yep.
and the growth rate will be so high. And similarly with me, I've sown mine into. I've actually run out of pots. So yeah. I've done so much sowing. So I've sowed mine in cups, plastic cups.
Oh, really?
At the farm, there was about 4,000 plastic cups. Oh, really? You know, like vending.
Yeah.
They're about this, you know.
Yeah.
And it's just silly for them sitting there.
Yeah.
So I've put one sweet corn in each one of those.
Yeah.
And you can fit 50 of them in a green tray.
Okay.
So, and I've done about 7 of them.
Yeah.
And so, but I can keep them in those probably for a month
easily.
Indoors.
Easily.
In the heat.
Yeah.
And it's going to get hot yeah. in that grate in yeah. there. And so by the time I put them out and they're a foot high, they'll have had a really great start.
Yeah.
And so, again, if you're someone who's got access to even an unheated greenhouse, like which is what the polytunnel is.
Yeah, what I'm using now.
Just keep them in there as long as you can to give them a chance to catch up. And similarly, you know, I've got peppers which are only just germinating now. And by rights, they should have germinated 3-4 months ago even.
Yeah.
But it was too cold.
Yeah.
And the fact of the matter is that even if I'd have got them to germinate and then I'd have potted them up, let's say I potted them up into February, March, they wouldn't have, they'd have, it's been so cold inside. Would they have continued to thrive?
I did chilies in my heated propagator in the heated greenhouse and I still couldn't get them to germinate.
In when? January, February?
February, it would have been late February probably.
Yeah.
And eventually they did germinate, most of them.
Yeah.
And now they're starting to get a bit of growth on. They're probably 2 inches high at this point, which is not where I'd like them to be. But they are going
but
now.
Everyone's in that probably, position.
But everyone's in the same boat, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's just going to be, I think it's going to be one of those years. And this is interesting because, you know, I don't recall having one of these years before.
Mm.
In the, you know, since I've been growing, you know, seriously, you know, something where you're maybe 6 weeks late.
But interesting to listen back to some of our previous podcasts from this time of year.
Well,
I reckon 2020 was really hot at this point.
I'll tell you what last year was really hot at this point because my potatoes were in, all of them, on March the 19th.
Wow. Wow.
All of them.
2 months.
Whole crop. Yeah, so it's a whole 8 weeks.
And you're just sowing spuds now.
They're all in.
Wow.
My indoor potatoes were in a month ago.
Yeah.
Because I've got a small section of new potatoes in the polytunnel indoors.
Yeah.
But I finished sowing my potatoes on Thursday.
Wow.
But I know other growers who've not even got on their land yet to put their potatoes in.
Yeah.
And I expect there are people out there in the UK who haven't. And it's just been, and that is because of the wet.
Yeah.
But I just couldn't get them in. They would have rotted if I'd have put them in.
Yeah.
If I'd have put them in a fortnight ago, well, I wouldn't. Well, it was just like a quagmire.
I'm watering mine.
And so it's bonkers. And so, years like this do happen.
Yep.
But I can't remember it being so late. But I obviously keep photographic record of things.
Yeah.
And I've got quite a detailed diary about sowing and planting times. But a lot of my things were sown already.
Mm.
But I just could rely on the heat
because
it was so warm last year. Do you remember?
Yeah. Oh right. Yeah.
Well, we had a drought. We had the hottest day on record, didn't we?
It started about now, didn't it? About this time of the year.
But it had been warm.
It had been warm, hadn't it?
And then, well, I must have been out rotivating that ground that the potatoes went in a full fortnight or a month before, muck spreading on all that.
Yeah.
And I couldn't do any of that.
No.
I just couldn't do it.
No.
So my tomatoes will go in soon as well. But again, they're just in pots at the moment. And some of them, I've really struggled with germinating them.
Yeah.
But they were, funny enough, the Roma were fine.
Interesting.
The Roma and the San Marzano. But the Sungold were a nightmare.
I can recommend, espouse the virtues of germinating tomatoes and chilies indoors on a sunny windowsill.
Yeah.
I think that's worthwhile, especially if you're going to do it early and actually you can get around that problem then. Because relatively speaking, most people won't be growing loads of those. You know, my 117, whatever, is crazy. That's silly. I've given loads away and everything.
Well, you're going to be 25 today.
Yeah.
I think I've got, I don't even want to say how many tomatoes I've got.
I've got one. Be nice.
About 400, I'd say, probably.
400 tomato plants.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Mate,
they're not all going indoors, though. There ain't enough room. But I will be doing big run of tumbling tomatoes in green crates inside the polytunnel as well.
Yeah.
Or tabletop.
Yeah.
So they're going in. And then I will try and put all the San Marzano outside, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. And then I've got some different varieties I've never grown, which I'm going to try. I've got those Black Opal.
Yep.
Saint Pierre, I've never grown. You ever heard of that?
Yeah.
Have you done them?
About four. I don't think I have done those, no.
So we'll do those, Sun Gold, and then Cherry Vine, loads of them anyway. We'll talk about tomatoes on a whole podcast probably at some point.
We do most weeks, don't we?
Yeah. So anyway, to answer the lady's question, yeah. though, I think a lot of people have struggled
yeah.
with germination. Your options are to try again.
Yeah.
And I would even still have a go at chilies now.
Would you?
If I had an indoor growing space.
Yeah.
Even yeah, I would. Because I think that if you look at what you could... Because I know that I can go online and buy plug plants now, right?
Yeah.
So what are they? 3 weeks old?
Yeah.
So, yeah. you know, I'd give it a go. But my... But which leads me to the other thing, which is though I would probably look to buy in my locality.
Yeah.
Because there's so many people who've got little stalls here and there and by the side of the road and things like that. I would look to just try and buy the plants I need now.
Yep.
And that might actually, going back to our first question, you know, if that lady is struggling with all of the weeds on the plot, getting some starter plants that you can bang in, that's not a bad idea either, is it?
Well, you can get quite a good value for some of it, can't you? I mean, obviously it's cheaper to buy seed, but if you go down to your local garden centre, nursery, whatever...
Oh, I didn't mean the garden centre or nursery. I meant like
Facebook Marketplace.
There's so many in the UK at the moment. Yeah. There's obviously everybody like Alan who's sown too many tomatoes who are trying to sell them off
and
make a bit of dollar back.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know, typically half price or even less, I would say. And you can get some really nice varieties and really good quality plants as well. You know, it's people generally who like doing what they're doing. Yeah. They're not doing it for any other reason than the love of it, are they? And certainly, you know, where you might be paying. They were £6 for 3 chilies online. That's plug plant delivered. That's not delivered. That's obviously before delivery. You can get them for half of that.
Even in my local garden centre, though, like not the big one, but the little family run one. £1.50.
Yeah, that's not bad.
It's not too bad. No, I thought it was quite reasonable. And when you consider that probably, I don't know, what, 3 or 4 chili plants, and you won't need to buy chili all year.
No, and chilies are expensive now.
Yeah. You know, I thought it was quite reasonable, I have to say. And
the other reason I would encourage people to just have that next go or buy those things is because I don't think we're going to be alone in the fact that it's not just people who grow vegetables on an allotment or at home who are going to have struggled. I would imagine that the price of potatoes will be quite high in come harvest time because everyone struggled and the crop return won't be as high, particularly on goods that are grown in this country.
Yeah.
So I would imagine, you know, potatoes will be expensive. Maybe the carrots will be expensive. Mm. All of the fields around where we live were covered in plastic, weren't they? Did you notice driving around?
Yeah.
Just trying to dry the soil out and to get the stuff in and things like that. So I think that they'll, you know, a lot of crops are going to be expensive.
Yeah.
So it isn't a bad time to be growing these things.
No. But I think as well, if you persevere, I think it's worth being patient, but also having a backup plan. Mm. And it's worth going out and buying a few plants for that reason.
Yeah, I do as well.
If it's very specific things, I mean, I forget if the question mentioned anything outside those warm weather crops or not. But if it were other things, you know, I bought a tray of leeks because I hadn't realised I hadn't sown. I did, actually, it turned out I had sown some. Yeah. But I hadn't thought I'd sown very many, and it turned out I hadn't sown enough. So I bought, for £3, I bought probably another 50 leeks.
Yeah, which is probably all you need,
I need for three quid.
One a week for a year, isn't it?
It's, you know, it's probably all the leeks I'm going to need.
Yeah.
And I've got them now, and I've potted them on.
Yeah.
And they'll grow. They need a little bit of time to get going. But once they're established...
My leeks are tiny, mate.
Yeah.
They were late going in as well. Everything was late going in.
Yeah.
Just because of that germination time. And I had a couple of fails. I had some... I had some seed trays that I'd sown up and just left on in the tunnel, but they mossed over.
Yeah,
you know where you get that green.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes that doesn't halt things coming out through, but I don't ever. It doesn't ever look good, does it?
It's just that, you know, it's been standing in water typically.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Well, no, they're indoors, mate.
Yeah, how's that happening? That's weird.
I think it's just, noticeably, it's the ones on the sides of the tunnel. So maybe it's cooler over there, or maybe it's a bit damper over there.
There's condensation dripping down.
Could be, but it was noticeable, and some of those didn't look great. So I made subsequent sowings of leeks because I didn't want my crop to suffer. I did grow some really nice leeks this last year. I've just finished them.
Mm.
But this year I've gone over trying multi-sown rather than individuals. Yeah. And I want to see how that works.
I've done a lot of multi-sowing this year, I have to say.
Yeah, like three or four?
Yeah, so far it's quite reasonable. I've had some losses already at the allotment. Again, flea beetles battered me.
Mm.
And some of it's bolted. And I don't know if that's just where it's been.
What radish?
Rocket particularly.
Oh, yeah, but it's what it does, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's cool. Yeah. No, I'm bolting now. Thanks very much.
Yeah. It went from being all right, but it was a bit battered by flea beetle too. Oh, it's starting to flower. Great.
Yeah.
So that's just going to have to come out again.
And that's been sown this year.
Yeah. I had some really nice early sowings, and I'm now eating lettuce on grown. And every week or so, I can go around the house and get it. And then in between times, there's plenty of the lot.
Lovely.
So I'm in a nice place with that. But the leaf, the mixed leaf that I've grown and the rocket has been battered by flea beetles to the point that I wouldn't bother touching it. I'll give it to the chickens, yeah. Yeah, really mixed, bad.
Lettuce doesn't normally get flea beetle, does it?
Well, the salad leaf mix, I think.
It's probably got mustard in it, mizuna
mix and
stuff
that sort
like
of thing.
That.
But like the Lola Rosso and the cos lettuce that I've grown, I'm just doing the...
I'll tell you what, the more I grow Lola Rosso, it becomes
amazing,
one of choice, doesn't it?
I'm loving it, yeah.
It doesn't bolt very easily either. It's really lovely how
nice
it seems
to stand.
Nice
and crisp and crunchy, and it's got a bit of colour for your salads.
I think it's absolutely wonderful stuff. Yeah. And I've certainly enjoyed growing it. And again, we've got it in. I've got that in, and I've got oak leaf in at the moment.
Yeah.
And I've got all year round.
Yeah.
And little gem.
Yeah.
Little gem. And I'm growing those all as cut and come again. And I'll tell you what, mate, it's looking really pretty out in there.
I've grown some. Have you heard of Lenny or Leany?
Leany, yeah.
L-E-N-Y.
Yeah.
Grown that this year for the first time.
Any good?
It's curly leaf kind of.
Oh, no, I've not grown that.
Really nice.
No, I haven't grown really that nice. One. And I kept it quite simple with the salad, and there's a lot of salad in the tunnel now.
Yeah.
Yeah. But keep those subsequent sowings.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it looks all lovely now. And you think, that's great, isn't it? Keep sowing every fortnight, every 10 days.
Mm.
Because it's amazing how quick it goes when it goes.
All of a sudden,
you
it's gone.
You need the next lot to go in, don't you?
The problem you've got is that we're coming up to a point where I would suggest you probably need to consider not sowing for a little while.
Because of the germination rate.
The germination rate and the fact that it'll be too hot, especially with the way the weather's likely to go again this summer. They're talking about El Nino this year, aren't they, again? And
what about putting it in a shaded...
I think if you can shade it, maybe.
Yeah.
But it's like what you're likely to do is to sow it. Germination rates might not be great if it's too hot, and then it'll probably bolt anyway.
Yeah.
So I think if you were sowing it probably this week and next, and then I might be tempted to take a little break and then perhaps look to sow again in maybe mid-July. Mm. Although it'll be hot then, by the time the seeds have germinated and you're getting them outside, it'll be starting to cool off again.
Yeah, definitely. That's what I did last year.
Anyway. Yeah.
So anyway, hopefully that'll answer that lady's questions.
Yeah, I think that was it. So a couple of questions. So thank you very much for putting the questions on there. It gives us something to chat about. It's really nice. And,
yeah, and a bit different as well.
Yeah, it's a bit different for us. Hopefully it's been interesting for you guys. We will return back to the self-sufficiency series at some point, but I just fancy taking a break from that for a session and come back to it later on.
Marvellous.
Yeah, got anything else to say, mate? Are we going to call it there?
I think that next episode we might delve into a little bit of prepping because we haven't done that for a long time.
Okay.
But, there are some things that I've been doing which I think maybe we could draw out, but I'd like to hear some, you know, if there's anyone online, you know, and there are other things that they would like us to maybe go into, we could do that. I think that's always handy, don't you?
Yeah.
It's always a nice thing to do.
Yeah.
I think that perhaps given the state of things now, the only other thing I might like to do is I might like to talk about water and water harvesting and making the most of it, really. And, and it might not take up a great amount of time, but I think that certainly in the next episode we might look at, you know, ways you can preserve that water.
It's certainly current for me because it's what I've been looking to try and do. It's one of the things I set myself as an objective for this year. And I've been trying to gather suitable materials.
Yeah.
So finding water butts. People have realised water butts are valuable.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, mate. Not cheap now, are they?
No, no. So none maybe just pick it up for free nonsense.
No. Maybe listening to what people will do out there in different parts of the world might give us some help.
Yeah.
And then we'll talk about what we try and do and how we can increase that. I think that might be quite a nice...
That sounds great.
Quite a nice thing to do. But if anyone's got anything else they would like us to cover, then maybe just let us know through the... Facebook page.
The group seems to be the best place. And what's really nice, again, we've got people in there asking for advice. And I forget the person's name, but they was asking for advice on gigs, and I'm not in any position to answer that one. But
there are gandering.
Yeah, but there are people on there asking for advice, and people are giving it. Yeah, and that's exactly what we wanted to try and create. So it's really feeling nice in there.
Absolutely,
it's lots of people contributing. So thank you very much, everyone who's doing that.
People who know more than us out. Well, don't tell anyone.
all of them. Don't say anything.
All right then, mate.
Well, anyway, thank you very much for your time, mate. And thank you very much, everyone, for listening. We will speak to you again soon. Cheers. Bye-bye. So, ladies and gents, if you've enjoyed listening to the latest episode of the Homesteading UK podcast, please get onto our Facebook group, Homesteading UK Podcast Facebook group. come and follow us on Instagram and all those good places, and please do tell all your friends about us and how much you've enjoyed listening. Come back again next time. Thank you very much for listening. Cheers. Bye bye.